Welcome back to the Minicom Show featuring Lenny, the only NFL podcast where one of the hosts would never be arrested robbing a bank wearing a dog mask because he wouldn't have to wear the mask. That's Lenny. I'm Mina Kimes. That laugh you heard is a special guest, called it a crossover episode. Dominique Foxworth is out spending time with his family. Womp womp. So today, if you listen to this podcast, you already know his voice. That's Nate Tice, one of the co-hosts of the Athletic Football Show. Nate, welcome back.
Thanks for having me. I the dog mask reference, like, actually, I'm a part of that niche. There's probably like 90% of okay. your audience is like, what
yeah.
are they talking
we
about
should probably
there?
Explain but, that. Yeah.
but okay. I loved it. It's a great pun. It tied in. It's great. That was a great Lenny joke to start.
I feel like I have to first start with a caveat. I do not condone bank robbery. This is not a pro bank robbery space. However, there was a brief moment yesterday where I was convinced that a man who goes, I feel like we got to use a little allegedly. Okay, I'm not even going to say his name. A prominent okay. Chiefs fan on Twitter.
There you go.
Was reportedly, allegedly funding his trips to Chiefs games, who wears a wolf mask, a whole wolf yep. costume, really,
yep.
by robbing banks. And there was a photo of a guy wearing a wolf mask and a red hat robbing a bank that I was yep. led to believe was him. So it turns out it's not him. It
wasn't.
Separate wolf robbing banks.
Mistaken however, identity.
However, there is a lot of stuff floating around about the fan, which suggests that
it's
yeah.
There's a lot. There. I saw some tweet that said some Chiefs fan, and I get it. Like, you kind of become part of this community of football Twitter with your teams, but the fan was like, you think you know somebody. It's like, do you? Do you think you know a guy that wears the wolf mask to the games every game? You really think you know him? Is that your buddy? You know his whole family and everything as well?
This guy, great Seahawks follow on Twitter, Parker, I forget his last name, shoot, Parker or something.
Lewis?
Something like that. Lewis, yeah, L-E-W-S, yeah. I think.
Sonic's Avatar.
Sonic's Avatar. So on First Take today, I did my Patrick Mahomes as MVP, always has been. You know, whatever. I mean,
love it.
Safe space. Certainly a
safe space. Definitely place where safe we agree. Space for that.
and he replied, well, like, yeah, one of his fans robbed a bank to see him. If that's not an MVP, you know what? Points were made. Like, there's a lot of statistics floating out around there justifying the case. We got to throw in one more, which is robberies.
That's right. I know. That's the thing is the Eagles stadium has a jail cell in it.
Yes.
So, but that, that's more like battery. You know, vulgarities and stuff like that, as opposed to robbing a bank to go to see these games. So maybe there is a little bit of a difference there. But that's another, what is it, EPA per arrest? You know, Mahomes wins at that one as well.
Oh, boy. Yes. expected prison time.
We'll workshop this throughout the show.
Yeah, we got to talk about that. Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot to discuss there. I will say, wearing the outfit of a prominent fan is the perfect crime because everybody's going
right.
to like pin it on you or the fan right. rather if you like dress as a mascot.
It's like if after a Raiders game and some guy in a gorilla suit gets arrested, because a gorilla, it's like, well, we can narrow this down. I mean, this seems to be what's happening with the Cardinals front office and coaching staff right now.
God,
a little mistaken
identity. That story flew way under the radar.
Oh my God. But I mean,
what to make of it?
If there is going to be mistaken identity in the NFL, especially amongst staff members, it's going to be a bald guy with a goatee. So like, if there's going to be one look that you can throw somebody else under the bus, that's going to be the look. But I know that's kind of, I still think that might be one of the craziest stories that's no one is really, it kind of lasted for about an hour and then just kind of went away. Like, I know, that's a crazy story.
For the many people who missed that one, Cardinals assistant coach was let go after something that happened in Mexico and then has accused Cardinals of pinning something that their general manager, who's now on leave for health reasons, hopefully he's okay.
Yes.
Putting it on him. They do look astoundingly alike. Yeah. So,
same build and everything.
It's okay. Like, a lot of allegedlies needed at the top of this show. There is nothing alleged, however, about your presence on this podcast. It's very good. I'm very excited to have you back. It has been a while. And I'm excited to have you filling in for Dominique. Big shoes to fill. So a little bit of housekeeping. So far this season, for much of the season, we've been doing kind of like a Monday Night Football discussion, and then we do winners and woofs. So starting now, I am flipping it because the games are not great. And and I think, but I actually still think these games are worth talking about because, and we did this last week with the Cardinals. It's a good opportunity to take stock of these teams, including like the Rams, who are eliminated. So we are going to talk about the Rams and the Packers, who are still in contention in the second half. But I thought we would start with our winners and our woofs. And I'm going to go first. I go winner, woof, woof, winner, Nate, so that it's...
Winner, woof, woof,
yeah, okay. Just, you know.
We bookend it with positivity.
Start positive, end positive.
Yeah.
It's like, stuff in the middle.
Isn't that the kind of like the stuff in psychology that you only remember the beginning and the end of everything? So it's like perfect. You just, yeah, it's all good times and everything.
It's like if you write a word and you have the first and last letter correct, people can usually guess what the word is.
Right. Yeah, I like this.
Or like a Subway sandwich where like the bread is fine, but like the stuff inside the meat is like not the highest quality. Subway sandwich.
Because then you're only getting the bread. Well, that does make every sandwich, like though. It. Like, that's the component. Everyone thinks it's the stuffing. No, it always comes down to the bread. It's always the bread. Yes.
Okay.
Good start.
So let's start with
rest,
the bread.
Two arrests, bread, psychology talk. This is great. Great football podcast so far.
The Jaguars, who are my winner, are truly the warm bread aroma of this season. And I wanted to talk about them in particular, Yuan, because you've been, I feel like, probably one of the most prominent voices supporting Trevor Lawrence since he was drafted. So I thought it was a good opportunity to have you on and talk about what you're seeing from him lately, because what we're seeing from him lately is awesome. I mean, all you have to do is look at the statistics. You know, since the bye, he ranks near the top of the NFL in just about every category, no matter how you slice it. One of the things that really has jumped out to me is just how quickly he's getting the ball out, how much better they've been against man coverage. And that's not all him, by the way. Some of that has to do with the play design and the play of his skill players, which we can talk about. But this is a team that is now very much in contention to win the AFC South, coming off of a huge win against the Cowboys. Let's start here. Like, what do you think is the single biggest reason behind what we're seeing, what we've seen over the last, I don't know, 5 to 6 weeks from this team?
Oh, man. Well, I think they just kind of honed in on what they are. I've had complaints about this roster construction and you know, they improved at receiver, but they went from crap to average as opposed to like to good or anything like that. But I think, I mean, there's got to be some props. I'm going to gush about Trevor Lawrence in a second, but Doug Peterson really has just been fantastic, I think, and the whole offensive staff. And that Cowboys game was the epitome of it, not only because of the final result, but this is the whole thing, my discussion with Trevor and why my love for him, this sounds so weird just to say it like that, but my why I was a fan of him, this generational number one pick, oh my God, I really went out on a limb with a guy I like.
I was questioning him his rookie season, despite the circumstances.
I had a little doubt, but I bought more stock as everyone else was selling it. And that's the thing, is that why it's process instead of results. And the results are finally coming in for both Trevor and this team. But the process was always so good with Trevor. And that's why I was such a fan of his. It was that, man, for a guy that's generational, it's not only just the traits that he's 6'6 and twitchy and can drive on throws. He can kind of layer throws in and knows how to throw a touch. He can throw on the move. But then it was just the results weren't there. And last year it was easy to chalk it up, Urban Meyer and throwing to just, you know, insert receiver here. He's throwing Laquan Treadwell, throwing go balls to him. He's throwing to Tavon Austin in the back of the end zone. And I'm just like, he's going to be fine. But then, you know, there's a lot of good to have here. But then also just what Doug Peterson's honed in with these receivers, Zay Jones, the Marvin Jones, Evan Ingram, you could see hints at it throughout the year. But this Cowboys game, as soon as Leighton Vander Esch went out for the Cowboys, and Damone Clark, 33, had to go in there. Oh my God. It was like Stephen Ruiz does the microscope meme with Kyle Shanahan. That's what Doug Peterson did to the Cowboys back seven.
Backups, yeah.
Oh my God. It was just, you know, jet motions, split zone, all this stuff that it's eye candy and it influences those guys and makes them communicate. And he just, a lot of guys I'll get on offensive play cards from get away from the good stuff. Doug Peterson's like, no, let's whip cream this.
Yeah,
let's just, no, we're piling this Sunday with whipped cream. So yeah, that's what I think has just been really honed in. Great play calling with Trevor being more confident.
Yeah, it's funny because I started off wanting to talk about Trevor, and we will talk about it, but like,
yeah,
This game was kind of more about Peterson for me.
Yes.
And the winner is the Jaguars. So we're thinking holistically here because we were texting about this because I did, this was an early rewatch for me because we talked about the game on Monday on NFL Live. Okay, so the Jaguars' run plays in this game were crazy.
Yeah.
Like, there is so much crazy stuff happening on just about every single
dressing.
One of the... Like, I mean, to your point about confusing those linebackers, they were in hell. But yeah. I almost don't... Even if they were, like, the starters, I think it still would have been a problem because there was, I mean, just...
Well, Anthony Barr was in hell.
He was struggling. Yeah, and LB went out early, and I'm sure that would have helped. But, like, honestly, I can't even... It's not like they're I mean, and it was also, I think, about the Cowboys, who we're going to talk about a little bit more. This is something replicable to attack them, which is give the linebackers a lot to look at and stretch them horizontally in the run game. I don't think a single end around or reverse in this game didn't go for at least 10 yards. It was
or first down. Yeah,
they were in hell. There was fake screens, fake guys in motion, fake counters, fake this. I mean, it was just chaos back there. And I think Peterson has kind of realized, like, it's not the best group of skill players in the NFL, but they're really athletic. And if you can get the ball in their hands and get them into space, this is an efficient offense.
Yes.
And I think you saw that on display in this game because the Cowboys had no answers for it
at all. And they all played off one another. So he did split zone, which is zone, and a tight end crosses the formation. Then he did a reverse off of split zone. Okay, end around. So same thing, tight end's going across the formation, but then they have the end around going across. And then they had the screen off of the split zone. So it's with the ghost motion and all that.
Yeah.
And that's the thing with a great point about the athleticism with their guys. Like, how he uses Evan Engram, this is good coaching compared to bad coaching.
Yes.
Compared to his tenure in the Giants, Evan Engram, is that, okay, the guy runs a 4-4 and change at tight end. Okay, let's run him vertical. Let's just have him go down, stretch defense. Doug Peterson goes, no, let's have him go horizontal and just run away from guys. And it works fantastic.
This started last week. It was sort of the Evan Engram breakout game. He had him, Lawrence must have targeted him at three or four times
him.
On crossers. It worked every time. Like,
The
thing about Evan Engram, so he was drafted in the first round because of his athleticism. You remember he was incredible at the combine. He is really good with the ball in his hands.
Yes.
Problem is getting the ball into his hands early in his career.
A little dicey.
So what Peterson has done is, like, he's really simplified his role in the offense. And again, like, to your point, it's about coaching. It's about play calling. It's about mismatches, but it's also about identifying what your players are actually good at.
And that's it. Exactly. Like, all these guys are flawed, except for Trevor. He's perfect in every way. But it's the touchdown, the double move to Zay Jones, which was awesome. This is another great little snapshot of coaching, scheme, and understanding matchups. The NFL is all about matchups. There's a lot of good players out there. It's going it's just like if you're playing Madden or something. Who's my 92 overall against their 72 overall? Okay, let's just pick at it the entire game until it pops. So that double move, against the number one, the corner for the Cowboys, he had a rough day. I know he had a rough day.
Yeah.
He's a number at this point right now.
Yeah.
But it's
that's not going to be the last you see.
No, it's
going
not.
After him.
It's
yeah.
not. And so they do the double move on him. But so they have Chris Manhertz in the game, the tight end for the Jaguars. When Chris Manhertz is in the game, they were going to run the ball, the Jaguars.
Has there ever been a more aptly named tight end than Chris Manhertz, by the way? All right, keep going.
I know, he wears 84, which doesn't really, he's got to wear a little more gruff number.
He's there to block, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. This is the stat I got. So there's been 73 tight ends that have played 200 more snaps this year. He's 72nd of 73 tight ends in the percentage of run to pass. I think they only pass the ball 1/3 of his snaps that he's in the game. And it's usually because of shot plays like that where he's blocking and setting the edge. But again, understanding the personnel, I'm not going to have Chris Manhertz run vertical. I'm not going to have him run routes. No, but they know what I know. They know that we're going to run the ball with him in. So let's do a shot play off of it. And we've already shown stop routes on the outside. So it's just playing off one another. And that's just good play design and play calling. And just again, understanding personnel. So it was an awesome Trevor throw. Like, he's throwing it on the move like off platform. His feet aren't set. He's lining a 50-yard throw on the money. But on top of it, it was great design and great just understanding of what's going on in the game.
So bit of negative news is the Jags did lose their starting left tackle, Cam Robinson. Yes. I actually, and this is, I think, maybe a reason for some hope for Walker Little, whose replacement, who was a second-round draft pick, I believe, and has played some. I actually didn't notice when he came in watching.
Right.
So I think that, you know, it's concerning. It's mitigated a little bit by the fact that, you know, Little does have experience, and also by the fact that Trevor's superpower is avoiding sacks. This was one bright spot of his rookie season. I think we talked about this. Like, he finished bottom four or five, along with all the other rookies, in just about every metric except sacks. And when you see that, like, at 6'6", his short area movement ability is remarkable. And it's honestly maybe his best trait as a quarterback, and it's a very valuable trait as a quarterback, because when you avoid negative plays, you can keep, you know, drives on time. But it is... It's not a good thing to use your left tackle, starting left tackle. And of course, it's not a good thing against the New York Jets, who do have a talent advantage. Unlike the Cowboys, there are not obvious mismatches to hunt on that defense. It is going to be tougher sledding for Trevor than it was this past week.
It absolutely is. That's the thing, is the Jaguars O-line is fine. It's like very replacement level to me, like just very average across the board. Sure, of course, they spent big money on, but it's... That's exactly it. Is Trevor, this is again talking about process and results. That's what I would watch Trevor last year, especially as a rookie season. I was like, this guy should be taking 60 sacks. And the fact that he was top five in sack rate, or six or whatever it was. And then, but on top of it, I finally get to gush about him, is that when in that process, is that he always stayed on time. So there's a lot of things, like when we're going to talk about the Monday night game, you watch a guy like Baker Mayfield bouncing around the pocket. His feet are all out of the whack, patting it. Throws late, like trying to gun it in there so the ball sprays. Trevor would be bouncing around the pocket, and he had a couple of really good snaps in this game, and then the ball's out as the receiver's breaking on the route. And that's why I kept, like, why I was so optimistic about him. It's like, if they get some talent around him, this stuff is just going to burst. Like, this stuff is going to look so good because he's doing all the right things. It's just, it looks like crap right now. But anyways, yeah, going against the Jets. Jets defense is really freaking good. It's a legit top five defense, good at all three levels. I mean, is Quinnen Williams playing? If Quinnen Williams is playing,
questionable in this last one, so that makes me think calf, probably. Yeah. But it is Thursday, so
that's what I mean.
That
yeah.
is did they, huge.
Do they hold him out of Sunday to play him Thursday? You know, that's I'm curious about that, because I mean, they played well without him, but he is playing exceptional this year. Yeah. And I mean, but that's the thing with this Jets defense, is that they. All three levels, they have dudes. They're a defensive line. They rotate a bunch of guys. They have two good corners. Sauce Gardner is fantastic. Their safeties, like Whitehead, it just comes downhill and like wants to clothesline every single guy that he comes across. And then like one of my like most improved players in the entire NFL, Quincy Williams, the linebacker, Quinnen's brother, has been, I mean, he's
super good.
He's so good. He's like a banshee. Yeah. Like, I mean, and he tries to spear everybody that comes across the middle. It's actually really fun to watch. Jaguars cut him for some reason last year. So,
Quincy Williams revenge game.
It is a Quincy Williams revenge game. They cut him and then proceeded to draft two linebackers and sign two linebackers. So, and then this guy is playing at a Pro Bowl level. So,
how about that
self scouting?
Brings us to where I want to wrap, because first I'll say it's probably because the Cowboys are, because the Titans lost, not a must win for the Jags this game. And then they do play at the Titans, you know, which is going to be really fun. Yeah. The problem with this team is the defense. 32nd in pass DVOA. That actually shocked me. I didn't think they were that bad. And I think it's probably gotten better. Yeah, it might. There's like flashes from individual players on this team. Yep. Obviously, Rayshon Jenkins had incredible game safety against Dallas. Every now and then you see Walker or Key or, you know, various players flash, but they're going to, like, for them to win and to, you know, like, it looks like they might get into the playoffs, they're going to have shootouts, I think, for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
So still a lot to build on that side.
It's an entertaining team. Like, that's the thing, is like they have a lot of, like you said, with the defensive guys, you're talking about one guy standing out, yada, yada. It's like, that's exactly what it is. They're not put together at all, but it's that makes for entertaining playoff football when it's, yes, you know, 34-31 and lots of big plays on both sides of the ball. Like, that's why even with Dak, you know, and the last interception and everything, Dak was torching him. Like, Dak was on fire the whole game. It's just the same thing. Everyone remembers the end in the beginning. Yeah. So, or they're watching the Red Zone channel and they see the the two interceptions that happened. They're like, oh, Dak sucked. And it's like, no, Dak played great. And that's going against that Jaguars defense. No, that's a great point. And hopefully, you know, Trevon Walker can be healthy if they make this playoff run. The fact that he almost played last week is like freaky, and that's what he is. He is a freak. I think they're going to try and move him inside a little bit more, which I think will be really beneficial for him. We'll see if they do. I know they wanted to experiment with it a little bit, so he's got to have his hand in the dirt, and that will unlock, give him a path. He's going to be a good player. Like, you see the flashes with him. It's just he has no idea how to play football. So I think narrowing what he's good at, I think, will really
help
him.
That should help Allen, too, I think, having him. Especially if they're next to each other, I could see that being pretty effective. All right, Nate, what's your woof?
My woof is the Patriots. And
why?
Patriots.
Why would you pick the Patriots? What happened?
Even outside of that last play, which has been memed, and I mean, there's a lot to break down on that play.
So if you're listening to this, if you don't know what happened, let me give you the gift of looking it up. Just look up Patriots game ending. Okay.
That's all you need. That's all you need to see. There's been the Titanic music to it. There's been Benny Hill music to it. That's how you know it's entering the lexicon. It actually jogged a memory from my brain. Like, have I ever seen a play like that? When my dad was with the Raiders in 2015, they had a play like it at the end of the halftime, and it was a learning experience. It was end of halftime. They were fourth down. And Amari Cooper throws the ball back all the way to Derek Carr, like 30 yards. And then they start bouncing it around. And then Michael Crabtree gets the ball and just eats it. And he's like, let's get to halftime. No one remembers it. It was two bad teams going at it on Christmas. It was like a Thursday night Christmas game or something like that. 2015. Someone tweeted it. So
That was somebody who was like, not Coop threw a pretty good ball.
He did.
Amari Cooper has a good arm.
He does. And Crab had a good arm too. But anyways, why the Patriots are disappointing to me, or a woof to me, is that this whole Patriots situational awareness seems to be kind of falling apart the last year or two. I don't know if I know Belichick is a game situational genius, but I had to hear for 20 years about how all the players and assistant coaches were, you know, they got it too because Belichick was so good at it. Didn't really show up. Jacoby Myers is a good player, should get paid this offseason. He's a free agent, I believe. But that was it was a boneheaded play, which is just not what you're expecting out of a Patriots team in a big kind of key situation. But also, it's just this, it kind of came unraveled. They had the block punt or the botched punt play, where three of the guys aren't even looking at the snap when they snap it. And there's been multiple like special teams miscues this season. Having said that, I do like one of their rookie, Brendan Schooler, their rookie special teamer. He's a stud. He's the guy that handed the ball to Belichick early in the year.
That was a bull move. A deep pool.
It was from like week three. I know, back when I had energy for the season. But I don't know. This Patriots team is just very like, this doesn't feel like a Patriots team. And then the offense is very hard. They make it hard on Mac Jones. I actually feel for him.
I'm
how much praise he got last year, and then
nobody
like,
looks more miserable playing football right now than maybe Tom Brady and Mac Jones. But Mac Jones is number one, ironically, right?
Mac's just on his own. Oh my god, and he's just on his own. And everyone's like, what happened? It's like and they're asking me. It's like, well, look what's going on with the play calls a little bit, because they just don't really make the system conducive to his skill set. Mac Jones was at Alabama, ran a RPO heavy offense from the gun that attacked over the intermediate parts of the field. They had great receivers. He's great at throwing guys on the move and overs and crossers and leading them. His superpower, we talked about Trevor's superpower in the pocket. Mac has good pocket presence, but he's accurate as hell, especially when his feet are set. And they run a static, vertical, like they run an offense for a guy like Drew Bledsoe. Not Mac Jones. And that, it just doesn't make sense to me. So yeah, they're my woof right now, because I just thought, you know, their offensive line is sloppy. They have botched protections. Mac Jones is trying to get everyone set every play. And then he's looking at the sidelines like, and it's like, help a brother out. Like, that's how I feel for the guy. So they're my woof. I do like their defense. I do like their defensive players, but their offense is just a heavy, heavy woof right now.
Guy, Kyle Duggar, the Duggernaut. You coined that nickname. Did you see it? That was awesome. Such a sick play he made.
He's awesome.
Yeah,
honestly, one of my favorite players in the league.
the defense is really fun to watch, right? And
dude, Josh Uche,
yes,
the Jones, Marcus and Jack Jones, Judah.
Now that Barmore's back, the combination of Uche, Barmore, Godshaw. Oh, I always say his name wrong.
Okay, I'm glad you did that because I wrote his name and I've never said his name on a podcast because I don't know how to say it. So, Godshaw.
Anyways, he's good. He's good. Gotcha. He's good. And then, of course, Judon. Yeah, like they're very disruptive up front right now. They have, you know, obviously the cornerbacks have surprised pleasantly, and it's a good, really good safety group. Tavai. I mean, come on. It's just unwatchable on offense. But the initial point was just about the sloppiness of it. And, my first reaction to the horrible lateral was, God, we can't even blame Patricia for that. And. It's true. We've all been trying over the last 24 hours to be like, it probably doesn't happen. If not, you know, Matt Patricia, who deserves obviously a ton of blame for some of the stuff this season, but really it is the players, of course, but it's Bill Belichick.
Starts at the top.
Oh, special teams guy, right? Like he's supposed to be the reason the Patriots have had that reputation for so long of being good at situational football, not making the kind of dumb, boneheaded mistakes other teams make, is because of the head coach. So to see them do that is shocking.
It's like meeting your hero and you never meet your hero kind of thing. Like it's kind of like with Belichick, it's you're kind of seeing it unraveled. Like even after that botch punt, the special teams coach looks at Belichick before he starts yelling. And I'm just like, oh, God, what are you guys doing over there? And that's what happens. There's some brain drain. You know, a lot of people leave over the years. And it's just, but that's the thing. Belichick wants all of that. He wants his finger on every component of the game. But when it comes unraveled, it's like, well, shouldn't the blame go the same direction as the praise did all those years? So I don't know. That's where I'm at right now with it. Not taking anything away from Bill Belichick's career and what he's done. But the last year and a half has been very oof, this is rough right now.
I mean, he hired his friend to be the offensive coordinator. He absolutely deserves all the smoke for that decision.
Right.
It was his choice. Right. And it was,
And had a offensive coordinator, bachelor competition, giving roses to Joe Judge and Patricia throughout the season. Remember that? Every month it would come out new news and it was so-and-so is leading the charge for the play calling. And it's what are you guys doing? This isn't high school.
I think we might be at the end of questioning is this a Belichick mind game? Are we just too stupid to understand it? I think that's over now. Which is not to, he's the greatest coach in NFL history, but I'm just saying, I'm talking about the team right now. Okay, so my woof is something I want to talk to you about from a very specific angle. Jalen Hurts, sprained shoulder, throwing shoulder, important, out for an indefinite period of time. Probably not going to play Saturday, although there's quotes coming out today from Nick Sirianni. He's like, he's Wolverine or something, Shouldn't play, doesn't have to play. This is a team that is not only extremely, stacked. If any team can win games without their quarterback, despite how good the quarterback is, it is this team. And also, built up a pretty commanding lead over the Vikings. They would have to lose out. The Vikings would have to win out for them to lose the number one seed. After the Cowboys, they have the Saints and the Giants. So no reason to rush Jalen Hurts back into action. The reason I have them as a woof largely is because, and this is what I want to talk to you about, his injury concerns me because of his greatest strengths as a quarterback, which are his rushing ability and then throwing deep. And right now, maybe greatest strength is wrong. I should say the greatest difference maker, the things that make this offense so hard to stop right now. They are very hard to stop because of what he, not just his rushing ability, but the impact it has on the entire offense, obviously.
Right.
And then go balls to AJ Brown. Right. So I guess what I want to ask you is hearing about that injury, do you have any concern that there might be, I always hate doing this because we're not doctors, we're not Twitter doctors, we're not that one guy who.
Well, so I think we are could be better than Twitter doctors. Oh my God, they say everybody has
Twitter
a
doctors,
career altering injury, sprained MCL.
When a player goes down, they'll be like, based on my angle, it's gone. He's getting amputated.
Amputated. Trevor Lawrence got hurt at the end of the halftime against the Lions, and I see two tweets that go That looks like an ACL. This looks really bad. I feel bad for the Jaguars. He came out at halftime.
You got to be either extreme or everything's fine. Rub some dirt on it because that's most likely to get reshared.
Analysis. That's just sports, sports analysts in general.
You know, I guess my concern is just like, you know, I worry, like, if there is an injury, are they going to be more reluctant to put him in harm's way to use his body, especially in the types of runs they sometimes go to with him? And could there be an impact on his ability or willingness to throw deep? So that's what I wanted to discuss with you.
Yeah. Did they say it's the throwing shoulder? I actually didn't see that.
So he driven down on the throwing shoulder. Yeah.
I just saw
back and forth about this at first, but it is his right shoulder.
Okay. So that is concerning. Cause I originally, when I knew we were going to talk about this, with Hurts and just like, he's such a unique player, but he has improved so much. And one of the best weapons this year has been those QB sneaks. And Hurts this year has 94 designed rushes. The next highest is Lamar with 72. Fields has 64, and no one else has more than 50. So he is like quadrupling the league average for quarterbacks. And if we remember a few years ago, 2019, it would have been Patrick Mahomes got hurt on a QB sneak. Remember he hurt his leg? And then we had
his ankle, right?
Yeah. Chad Henne, a couple starts. And then also another thing I want to bring up too is when Cam Newton won his MVP, he had 132 carries that year, 132 rushes, I should say. And I didn't include the sacks and all the QB hits as well. Hurts has 156 already this year. Whew. These guys wear down, and it doesn't matter how big, how strong you are. I watched this Buffalo Bills offense, and I know some people have frustrations with Ken Dorsey. I actually think he's been doing a good job. But it's
I wish you could talk about that because I have so many. I do too.
I have so many Bills takes. But why there's been maybe some frustrations is Ken Dorsey's trying to limit how much they press the easy button, which is, hey, Josh Allen, go run the ball. Yeah. Which is, hey, Ostrich, go. We'll let you out of the pen. Go.
It's break in
go
case of emergency. QB draw. Yeah. QB draw.
And I mean, watching the Dolphins game when they start struggling, they went right to it. Bam. And it's like, but do it three times a game. Yeah, exactly. He has 41 designed rushes this year. He had 57 last year.
Yeah.
That's about the right amount. He has about the same. He has more scrambles this year, but that's a whole other story. But they're at least trying to find different answers rather than let's have our franchise quarterback get hurt. Like, and I know everyone's like, well, running backs take 200 carries. Yeah, and then what happens to them? Like, and then these guys are not only rushing the ball and taking open field shots, getting hit in the pocket sucks. Like, you take some clean hits in the pocket. Those add up. So why I'm bringing all these up is, as Hurts is so strong. They've shown him squatting 5,000 times now. He's a very strong, sturdy player. It's the NFL. And that's why it's so hard to lean into the QB run game or the QB's go do something game or the sneaks and everything. Those hits add up. I've seen Hurts take some real shots, especially like in the red zone when he's trying to score. I mean, he is no qualms with lowering his shoulder, but that's the thing. These are NFL defenders hitting him over and over. So that is a little concerning. I've seen this happen over and over. There's a lot of times I see this on Twitter. Why doesn't every team run QB sneak all the time? They don't want their franchise quarterback to get shattered. Because when QB sneaks suck. You get in there and you get hit from three different angles. And Hurts, his superpower was that he's so good at them and how they really build the offense around them, those short yard situations. But there is a drop off, or there is a flip side to this. It's a two-way street when you do use this type of attack. So it kind of stinks because he's been playing so well and I've really enjoyed it. In the back of my mind this whole season, I'm like, man, do we have to worry about him getting hurt? Cause he's taking a lot of hits.
Yeah.
Well, and then it came up. So it kind of came up naturally anyways, but that's the danger of playing this way.
Yeah. And I think just beyond like what it means for his career and going forward, like just, you know, when you're coming back with that injury, man, like, I don't know about the impact on throwing deep. I just threw that out because it is a very important part of his game. It's a very important part of this offense. I don't know what that's going to look like. But I do know, like, if your shoulder's hurt, you are, like, there's going to be some reluctance for them to, like, I don't know, run power. Like,
I separated my throwing shoulder my freshman year of college, and it still hurts to this day. I can't sleep on my right. I can't sleep on my right side. Like, so, I'm a backup quarterback in college. I'm not an NFL quarterback getting rehabbing every day, but it does affect you.
So, sit him as long. I'm holding this like little plant stick.
I see. Well, I have my whiteboard
pen. No, I always hold something. Sit him as long as possible is my verdict. I genuinely believe they can win one of those last two games, maybe even against Dallas, based, I mean, what we were discussing with Dallas and some of their weaknesses on defense, I do actually think that they can exploit those with Minshew. Minshew is not anywhere close to Jalen Hurts. His arm is not what it is. Obviously, the mobility. He is good at avoiding turnovers, which is probably the single most important thing he can do for this team right now. And I do think, like, you know, a play action heavy, put him on the move.
I think there's going to be a lot of under center.
A lot of under center attack.
That's
some of the
I think that'll be the biggest tweak. Yeah.
All right. This is going long. Let's get to your winner. We're going to talk about the Rams and the Packers for not that long. So
every pod I've ever been on, I always run long. So I'm sorry.
You know what? Actually, no. You know what? Let's take a pause. I'm going to cheat. We're going to take a break. Yeah. Come back and then lead the last half of this podcast. It's not really half. It's part of this podcast with your winner.
Love it.
With Caesars Sportsbook and Casino, every bet earns with Caesars Rewards. That means whether you win or lose, you're always earning towards perks like free stays at iconic Caesars properties, game tickets, dining, and more. And if you haven't started yet, here's a reminder. Your first bet is on Caesars, up to $1,250. Download the app with promo code OMAHAFULL and place your first bet. If you win, congrats. If you don't, you'll get it all back as a free bet.
Must be 21 or older, offer valid, and must be physically present in Arizona, Colorado, Illinois, Indiana, Iowa, Kansas, Louisiana, Michigan, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, and Wyoming only. New users and first $10 plus wager only. Must register with eligible promo code. Bet amount of qualifying wager returned only if wager is settled as a loss. Maximum bet credit $1,250. Must be used within 14 days of receipt. Tier credits and reward credits will be added to account within 7 days after qualifying wager settles. See Caesars.com/promos for full terms. Void where prohibited. No way to stop before you start. Gambling problem? Arizona, call 1-800-NEXT-STEP. Colorado, Wyoming, Kansas, affiliated with Kansas Crossing Casino, call 1-800-522-4700. Indiana, call 1-800-9-WITH-IT. Iowa, call 1-800-BETS-OFF. Louisiana, call 1-877-770-STOP. Licensed through Horseshoe, Bossier City, and Harris, New Orleans. Michigan, call 1-800-270-7117. Illinois, Maryland, New Jersey, Tennessee, Virginia, West Virginia, Pennsylvania, affiliated with Harris, Philadelphia. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem, crisis counseling and referral services can be accessed by calling 1-800-GAMBLER, 1-800-426-2537, or West Virginia, visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net. New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NEW YORK or text HOPE-NEW YORK, 467-369.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now, get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th, one-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. And I have to say, speaking from experience recently, having tried it for the first time in Detroit, it is absolutely delicious. Right now, you can get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Okay. If I was to be accused of being a fan of a team right now, I think it would be the team. I mean, other than Seattle, obviously, you know. Although I feel like I criticize them more than anyone. It would be the team you're about to talk about, because I am fully Lions-pilled.
I love it.
I love watching this team.
I do too. In professional wrestling, which you know I'm a fan of, they have baby faces, and they call them a true baby face, like a old school Hulk Hogan, even Stone Cold Steve Austin when he was rolling. He was kind of a tweener, and then they made him baby face. This is a white meat baby face is the Lions, and that is, they're very likable and they're easy to cheer for, and they have the underdog factor. And then I think how this Lions team is playing, yes, they're my winner, by the way, is how they're playing right now, especially since their bye week has been, I mean, legitimately a top 10 team overall with a top five, top six offense that's just finding the, not only just finding their way, adding layers to their offense, which has just been so fun to watch. Since I think one of the things I love now that I have access to True Media, it's so great for me, is because I can divvy it up this way, is it's really important to look at teams after their bye weeks, especially when it's in the middle of the season. You see a lot of changes. You see self-scouting. You see opponent scouting. They realize, hey, this rookie's been playing a lot better. Let's give him more playing time. That's when you see a lot of playing time shift, is after bye weeks. The good teams anyways do this. And the Lions, since their bye week in week six, so since week seven, they're sixth in success rate on offense, fourth in pass success rate, seventh in EPA per play, second in EPA per dropback, only behind the Chiefs, eighth in team DVOA, overall DVOA, 10th in offense DVOA, 13th in defense, sixth in special teams, which is also very important. I think they've had three fake punts this year. They have at least two. They might have three. They're a great situational team. They're third in red zone scoring. This last week against the Jets, which was, that's the thing, is like the Lions didn't score a bonanza of points. The Jets defense is good. It was a good defense versus a good defense.
Yes, tough.
It was King Kong versus Godzilla. Like, it really was. It was awesome. It's one of my, I'm really excited to watch that game in all 22. That's what gets me out of bed in the morning, is not only my newborn son, it's watching Lions offensive line versus Jets defense, all 22. But you watch that game and third down designs in the first half, they were gaming up the Jets because they knew the Jets would be in man coverage a bunch. Yeah. So they ran all these man beaters, and then the Jets went no more. And then the second half, they ran no man coverage on third down. But the receivers,
until
very important fourth down. Yeah. And speaking of our guy Quincy Williams, they gamed him up a little bit.
But Quincy,
I know they're off, but their offensive line is a true strength of this team, no matter what metrics say. And they have really good they have good receivers and a good grouping of receivers with Jameson Williams healthy. But DJ Chark's a nice player. Amon-Ra St. Brown's legitimately a star and very good in situations. And he's a great blocker, which is a very underrated thing about his game. That's why I compare him to Robert Woods coming out, not only because he went to USC.
Oh, he's so complete.
He's just a complete player. He's just a complete player. But that's the thing. And his biggest knock is that he ran a 4.6. But guess what? They have this guy named Jameson Williams who runs like a 4.28.
And Williams is still getting going. There was one route where he ran in that game, though, where I was like, oh my God, when they start putting this together. But the combination of him and St. Brown is like, they're not the two best wide receivers in the NFL, but those skill sets are so complementary and so good for attacking different kinds of defenses.
Yes, and then they have DJ Chark, who's like a true X. And it's that he can run a vertical route tree on top of it. Vertical, this is the talking on both sides of my mouth. There's vertical route tree, and then there's speed. Jameson Williams is a speed intermediate. He can take the top off, but then DJ Chark can get lined up on his own as an X one-on-one and run stops and glances and be a nice big target for Jared Goff.
They sacrificed Chark to Sauce Gardner in this game. This is going to be the thing. Somebody's going to get sacrificed to him.
That happens.
But the fact that they have the depth at wide receiver to do that.
Yes.
Because I think St. Brown is probably the most valuable player on this offense, but they were very deliberate about moving, he was in the slot a lot, moving him around, getting the matchups with him that they want. They wanted him on the worst, Mike Carter is actually good, who's their slot corner, but that's the corner you want.
Yep.
You want to match him up on the linebackers in the corner and safety. And Ben Johnson, who's their offensive coordinator, just has so many pieces and options at his disposal, and it really shows. But like, let's be honest, they won that game because their defense has showed up.
Yes.
I thought the Jets would be able to run on them, because even amidst the Lions' defensive turnaround, which you highlighted, we've talked about this a little bit. They were the worst defense in the NFL at the beginning of the season, and now they're playing above average, which is incredible, frankly, given where they were.
When you have a top five offense, that's great.
That's all it takes. They have still struggled to stop the run, and I think the Jets have a nice run game. I like Zonovan Knight. They
way more
stonewalled him in this game.
Yep.
I was speaking about Lynn McNeil earlier, but it was really the whole defensive line. Like Aiden Hutchinson, however you feel about him and Thibodeau and Walker and how you would arrange those guys, that dude has showed up in run defense, man. Like I was watching all of Knight's runs yesterday, and I was so impressed by Hutchinson's, it's the stuff we talked about before the draft, like his motor, he never gives up on a play, but also his place, like he was shedding blocks and bringing Knight back down. Yep. Like I was really impressed That it just is such, there's so many like ascendant players on this defense. They're not like quite there yet, but they are getting there.
That's a good way to put it. Ascending players. And I like, they put them in good spots, just like how their offense does. It's a well-coached team. Like they, we, you and I were texting, they tackle really well. That comes out of coaching and want to, like, that's putting a guy.
Kuda. Kuda's a good tackler.
Oh my God. I know. And I thought he was fine coming out of Ohio State as a tackler. He's like good. Like, I know it's like Antoine Winfield, but tall. But all their DBs are such good tacklers and they're in good spots. The first half of the year, they're busting all the time. And that's why they're so bad. Like, guys are just running free on them. And this kind of the second half of the year, they've just honed in. That's what, against the Vikings, especially. Vikings couldn't get anything on the ground against the Lions, and they were just teeing off on their guys. Safeties were triggering right away on runs, which speaks to me that they are like, they're honed in on the game plan. Also in that Vikings game, I know they played the Jets, but the Lions against this Vikings offense, Justin Jefferson ended up getting his stats at the end of the game. But how they game planned him out of the game, running double coverage on him, running every time it's first
inside
or second down. Cover two on him. They had Justin Jefferson was in the backfield and in the red zone. So they're like, oh, and the Vikings, I could tell, were like, here we go. We got him one-on-one against a linebacker. What the Lions checked into was, we're going to drop our defensive end and collision Justin Jefferson on his route. And Kirk Cousins short-circuited. And it's like, but that speaks to me again about game planning and knowing, and these guys know what to do in every situation. And on top of it, they have a Hard Knocks star, Malcolm Rodriguez, like,
oh,
which
so
is
good.
Finally a Hard Knocks player that's actually like good.
I mentioned this vis-a-vis when I was talking about how to defend Stephon Diggs and the Bills. I feel like every time you play the Bills, step one is Stephon Diggs, you know, and force him to be with the other guys. And I mentioned that the Lions arguably had the best game plan for Stephon Diggs we saw all season. And the guys they had on him were, you know, it's Jerry Jacobs. I mean, it's just
insert
like
name here. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the DBs are playing so much better now. You know, Kirby Joseph had a little bit of a rough one against, I mean, he was responsible for, I think, some of the crazy broken plays that Zach Lemon was just kind of. But
that was just chaos ball. Like that's
it
like,
was chaos.
That's like going to the craps table when you're.
That was really
Zach
the Jets'
Wilson.
Offense was just chaos ball against them. But if this team they still have need some help to get into playoffs. Obviously they have to win out. But
I'm tough out. Another fun team. Like you want fun teams in the playoffs. You don't want the Steelers. You know, from last year. No offense, Steelers, but
the 2021 Steelers.
Yes. Not prime, awesome Steelers. No, last year's version of Steelers with Big Ben tripping over himself. Like, you didn't want that in the playoffs. You want these that teams brutal. That can, you want the teams that are able to put up 30 points. Like, that's what makes fun playoff ball. And the Lions are a fun team. They're the baby face of the NFL, at least to me.
Do you want to know the terrifying truth or watch me hit some dingers? All right.
Dingers.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We all go through things socially where we don't feel like ourselves, where we don't feel like going out, where we feel drained, or we're not bursting with energy. And when you're not feeling right, that's where BetterHelp can come in. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills, how to set boundaries in so many different ways for which it empowers you to be the best version of yourself. It isn't just for those who experience major trauma. Therapy is for more than those people, and it's there to help you. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. It's there for you. It's there to help you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/MinaShow, MinaShow, today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/MinaShow.
So my notes, so usually on Monday night, I take like pretty copious notes. I have about...
You text me that you're taking notes and I was like, oh shoot.
My God, no. So ultimately I ended with like... less than 300 words on this game in my little notes. The Colts are back on Monday night next week.
How many night games do they have? I have 178 words on brutal. My notes for this game.
There's not much to talk about. The only thing that I think is really, that I would, the only relevant football material point coming out of that game, I think, for this season anyways, as the Packers remain in contention, is that with Watson and Dobbs on the field, the offense is once again functional. Yes. It is a, there, you know, Rodgers, I mean, you know, he had some off target throws, humorous interception. But the offense is fine. The problem with the Packers remains their defense. So let's talk about the Packers first and then the Rams, because the Packers are still in the hunt.
Unbelievable.
What do you call it? The ESPN put a graphic that said...
They keep changing it every week. They're like...
Call me maybe is the right phrase they used. I don't know about
referencing that. Referencing 2012 songs. Yeah,
that's... Not quite. I like
a 10-year delay.
In the hunt, lurking.
Lurking's a good one.
Loitering. Menacingly staring at the playoffs.
I was going to say staring at the dance floor. Like that. That might be one.
Yeah. Well, that's the Packers right now. They're on the edge of the dance floor. They're drinking their punch.
They are.
Trying to make eye contact with the playoffs. but the problem is, we'll talk about this game tomorrow, or Thursday's pod, rather, but the defense just stinks. And the defense, I mean...
The Rams were running on them.
The Rams were running on them.
That's all you need to know.
Miami is coming. Soft zone coverage against Miami.
With no press.
Although, wouldn't it be incredible if Joe Barry just completely changes everything they do on defense for this game and just goes full heel turn?
there you go. Yeah, that's exactly
it. I think that'll be it for Green Bay. I think that they're going to lose to the Dolphins. That said, looking ahead to next year, increasingly, I think Aaron Rodgers is probably just going to come back.
I think so, too.
Because, like we said, the offense is fine. It's fine, but
more piece.
What I want to ask you is, like, how do you fix this defense? Because, you know, they're probably going to move on from Joe Barry. Is that going to be enough? Because I've owned up to this dramatically overestimated this unit for the season. The beginning of the season, I was like, there's too much talent. But, like, even with a coaching change, do you think that they can improve? Because this is a very, very bad defense.
Yeah, I do think they have nice pieces. They need help up front. I think they need more. They have a lot of gap shooters. And when you have a lot of gap shooters, the Cowboys run into this a lot as well. You guess wrong sometimes, or you have two guys in the wrong spot, and an offense can just get 8 yards before they get contacted the first time because they don't have a linebacker cleaning up. Quay Walker's improved. He was really good last night.
Yeah.
He's shown flashes. It's a rookie. That's the thing is I think the last couple of years we've gotten really spoiled with some rookie standouts. It's like being a rookie in the NFL is really hard. And I think when you see going against what offenses do to linebackers these days, as opposed to just running lead ISO at them every play and then getting them going side to side. But I do think they need a schematic change. They got to change it up a little bit somehow. I know they blitz a little bit more this year than they did last year. But there's just too much where I go back to the Giants game in London, and they're getting where they had to match with base personnel because what the Giants were doing was Saquon and pony personnel, and the Giants were just gaming them up, and the Packers were like, okay, let's just keep running five-man pressure and running man coverage every play. And so the Giants were like, okay, this is really easy. There's no variability. There's no variance with this defense, and there's no like little change-up or knuckleball they throw at you. I think this is a very easy defense to game plan against. If I do this formation, they do this. If I do this formation, they do this. If I'm in this personnel, they do this. And I think that's what's hurting them. They don't have enough true dudes, especially up front. They have some nice players. Kenny Clark's a nice player. They have some guys, but it's just they don't have that true, like, they don't have Aaron Donald to clean things up, you know, or make the, they don't force a lot of negative plays for the opposing team's offense. And that adds up.
The whole defense at every level lacks physicality. The spine in the defense has really, I think, been the problem for them this season. Big time regression for both safeties. Like Adrian Amos was perpetually underrated for most of his career, but unfortunately, he's hit a wall.
Yeah,
Savage has hit a wall. When he doesn't play, but there's just major issues with tackling again at all three levels.
Yep.
You talked about how they have gap shooters up front. There's just they just need stoutness.
That's what they need.
And they've not drafted for stout. You know, they've
They emphasize speed, and they look like they emphasize speed. That's kind of how it looks. Yeah.
So to your point, I just think that it is both a scheme thing and a talent thing.
Yeah.
Because even if they bring in a new defensive coordinator, they need more heft at all of those positions. Coupled with some regression from Campbell and Douglas and the guys that we kind of worried you might see some from. You do get Gary back, so hopefully that will help. That was a huge loss. Huge loss in both run defense too, and rushing the passer.
Well, that's the thing, these defenses that want to live in too high and do that, they a lot of them were built for old style defenses, more Seahawks style defenses, and or the Legion of Boom's era, where it was like, hey, we're gonna get a lot of speed and a lot of gap shooters, and then we'll load it up with more bodies. But now you have light boxes with a bunch of guys that are shooting gaps as opposed to holding gaps and playing gap and a half or two gapping, and it's just a square peg round hole. I think they back up the Brinks truck to Jim Leonard in Madison.
I've been hearing that from Packers fans.
There's some rumors, and as I have a Wisconsin helmet behind me, he's a hell of a coach. I think he's phenomenal. So I think that would be great, but they still, like you said, where they need stoutness. I will say their offense and their offensive line, now that they're not doing the
fine.
Now that they're not doing the will they, won't they, the Lorelei Luke kind of thing. with Bakhtiari, now that guys don't have to worry about what spot they're playing every week, they're coming to their own. Yosh Niemann, like, he's gonna be an RFA after this year. Like,
oh, interesting. Tom's fine.
Tom's fine. Or I mean, middle round rookie playing left tackle and holding his own. But I mean, Niemann he can get RFA tendered this year. It's like somebody should throw some money at him because he could be both side tackle for somebody.
1 second, my power's not working. 1 second, it's about to die. There we go. All right. Sorry. All right. Well, that brings us back to kind of what's funny for next year, which is like, if Rodgers comes back, and we both think he will, they don't need a wide receiver. Like, that's not the need on this team, really. I mean, it's going to be.
They need more tight end than anything, I guess. Like,
I mentioned this to our friend Justice Mosqueda on his podcast. I threw out, like, they're probably picking, somewhere in the middle of the draft or whatever. Yeah. I don't know. I threw out Mike Mayer.
I mean, that would be amazing for them.
Wouldn't that be a great fit?
I know. That'd be perfect. Or
tight end, yeah.
Or they just, if Mercedes Lewis finally retires, they just get his one-for-one replacement. I love Mercedes. I'm glad he has the second half of his career that's been awesome. Just like the most dominant blocking tight end in the NFL. But they get Washington from Georgia. Packers love to trade back.
Yeah.
So maybe they trade back and take him in the late 20s. Like that'd be a one-for-one replacement there. Just get a young Mercedes Lewis.
I think if they could, improve somewhere on the spine of that defense, as we've discussed, and then I would love to see a tight end, because I think they've got something special in Christian Watson. And Dobbs, that combination is really nice.
Both of them have been really... Dobbs coming back from that injury, like, he looks so much more polished. It looks like it's like he took a break. It's like he took a vacation mentally.
He looked good. Catching some of those slants, he looked like young Randall Cobb.
He was out reaching for throws, which is like...
Good hands.
That's huge. And I don't...
Right, because he had the drops in the beginning
And that's Watson's MO. And now Watson is just becoming so much more comfortable running all these other routes, even though he didn't get the Rodgers signal, I guess. Rodgers at the end was... I don't know if you knew my fantasy score against Brian Greenleaf in our fantasy league, but it was a Rodgers Watson touchdown. I was up 9, would have put a dagger in me. And so when he missed the signal, I was like, I saw him signal it. I was like, don't you dare. You're up 2 score. Don't you dare throw a bubble to him for a touchdown. And he missed it. I was like, okay, the good.
Are we going to meet? So I had a bye. Me and Danny Kelly had byes.
I have Danny. I play against Danny. Yeah, because I'm the lower seed. I'm seed 4, even though I have third most points. I know. I'd prefer to play you.
I know, because I have Tyler Lockett, who will not be.
I love how there's 10 starters and you're like, oh, I lost Tyler Lockett. I lost Cooper Kupp.
Oh, stop it. All right. No one wants, literally no one
nobody
wants
this. Nobody wants this at all.
Okay, let's quickly wrap with the Rams. It's hard to talk about the Rams because nobody knows who the hell's playing on this team next year. I did see
coaching them.
That Matthew Stafford was on his wife's podcast and said he was coming back. Yeah, Kelly Stafford has a podcast. Seems like the one place where you can't lie. So, it stands.
It's on the record.
Hope that means that Matthew Stafford is actually coming back. However, Aaron Donald is a question mark. That's a big one.
He was last
year. Let's just do two big questions on the Rams.
Okay.
Let's say Stafford comes back and Donald comes back. How good is this team next year?
I mean,
right now, we are watching the guys that I watched in the preseason, guys who I didn't think were going to make the football team. Not even like, you know, I was like, are they going to get practice squad? Like, it is truly, they are dipping way down into their roster. Lots of snaps, lots of injuries, offensive lines down to their backups.
Yes.
That, to me, is the single biggest issue with this team going forward.
I agree. Offensive line and defensive aggression. Is my other thing. I don't know where Raheem wants to do all this soft coverage, and it just kind of like doesn't add up for me. And then you could even see it last night against the Packers. There's like second and ones where no DBs like on the screen, and it's like what is this defense? And I don't know. Sorry, that's another thing. But I would say offensive line.
Him and Joe Barry were kind of like the Spider-Man pointing though.
Yes.
Oh my god, that touchdown! What was it? God. The Higbee touchdown, I think, was is that the one I'm thinking of? There was one where I was like, oh my God, what are they doing?
Frame.
They were 8 yards off. Anyway,
I know.
Sorry.
No, you're good. But I mean, just even like, okay, so it was also it's just funny watching, and I know people want to sound smart with this when they say like sacks are a quarterback stat, and it's like, yeah, no shit. They're the quarterback. But also like watching Baker back there, and it's like, doesn't matter what scheme you get in, there's those happy feet throwing, spraying the ball. But like also why I'm saying that is watching Baker try and corral like 15 different bad snaps and going like, wow, this team doesn't even have backup depth for their center. Like that can even snap the ball. And so it's not even just the starters. It's just depth, which is, you know, it's a stars and scrubs team. So it makes sense. But it's, I mean, when you have a porous O-line like that, like truly porous, it's hard to win. It's hard to win.
Was before Stafford got hurt.
Yeah,
you
have no easy buttons. Like so you can't run the ball for 4 or 5 yards and make it easy on yourself on third down. You have to resort to quick game. You can't drop back and get explosive plays down the field because your offensive line can't hold up. That's what their superpower was last year. They would get into empty, and Stafford was ripping 20-yard throws down the field. And on top of it, so that's just offensive line. Receiver wise, they're stuck with Allen Robinson. They can't get out of that contract. You know, they still have the same issues. They still have the same issues they faced last year, where it's just no speed at receiver and the offensive line is wholly in a bad way, not wholly in the religious way.
So the offensive line, I was just pulling up their free agents. It is Bobby Evans, the free agent, who was a draft pick a few years ago. It was a pretty early pick. But for the most part, it's going to be the same offensive line you saw at the very beginning of the season.
Yeah.
David Edwards is also, who's a guard, is also a free agent. And yeah, so that'll be, Greg Gaines is a free agent. Sneaky big one for them. So anyways, they're, I think the optimistic case for this team is that Joe Noteboom comes back and he has played at a high level in the past. I think he is better than what we saw before he got injured this year, and having him back will help.
I agree. Yeah.
And that they can sort of shore up the interior. That would be, to me, and then of course beyond, you know, Stafford and Donald coming back, but it's tough. They basically have to hit on every draft pick and like, you know, get the margin of error is very small with this team.
They legit need legit starters out of this draft. Like, and I know that sounds like, oh, that's not that hard, but I mean legit starters, not like we're playing this guy just because he's a third round pick. Like guys actually can be long term starters. They need at least two from this draft, which is hard for any draft class.
Well, and then they also need picks. Logan Bruss, your guy, Badger.
Yeah.
Who was their second rounder last year and got hurt during the preseason. I think he needs to be a starter and like be competent next year.
They have three Wisconsin offensive linemen. because they got Edwards and they got Havenstein. So they got Rob was one of my buddies at Wisconsin too. He's had a tough year too. I think he's battled some stuff, battled some injury stuff. But man, it's no. But that's the thing. I feel about this team is how I felt about them going into this year. But now I actually, it's more one of those where I was glass half full about it. I'm like, hey, McVay will dial it up. McVay will figure it out. And then now watching the first half of this year, I was like, oh, never mind. Okay, this is a little rougher than I realized. So I'm a little more glass half empty about how I felt about him last year.
It really is like you put McVay in like the most difficult. Like it's like calling an offense the level of difficulty turned up to all the way to the max.
Yep.
Entire offensive line wiped out. Yep. To lose Cooper Kupp, you lose a quarterback, and it turns out like players do matter, guys. Players matter. All right.
I had someone ask me this. It was Devontae Adams because the Raiders face the most cloud coverage, cover two and cover six, than anybody on first and second down. And someone goes, so what does this mean? I put a one line. I said, Jimmy, you know, it's Jimmy's and Joe's instead of X's and O's. It's like Jimmy opens up the X's and O's to make it easier for Joe. And that's what players do. Good players make it life so much easier for everybody else.
Well, you have made my life easier by doing this podcast. Guys, check out Nate's podcast. How many days a week are you on?
I'm on two days. Sunday show and Thursday show. Yeah.
Those are the most important days.
Appreciate it.
Check it out wherever you get your podcasts, The Athletic. Nate, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me.